It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. EU leaders gather to find solutions to a growing migrant crisis. The 28 European Union countries gather in Brussels Thursday to discuss how to cope with a burgeoning migrant crisis in the wake of the mass drowning of migrants off the Libyan coast. The EU is under growing pressure to stem the flow of thousands of migrants from the Middle East and Africa who resort to people traffickers to make the often dangerous journey in overcrowded and unseaworthy vessels. Ban Ki-moon is the UN Secretary General.
The number of people who are dying is really shocking. The humanitarian tragedy highlights yet again the need to address the plight of these migrants.
Mr. Bond's spokesman Stefan Dujarric said the UN chief wrote to European Council President Donald Tusk ahead of the EU summit.
He urges the European Union to continue to take comprehensive and bold collective action to put an end to the humanitarian disaster at sea. The Secretary General also says that the safety, protection needs, and human rights of migrants and refugees must be at the center of the response.
Last year, the EU scrapped a Mediterranean search and rescue plan over its cost and concerns among some members that maritime operations were actually encouraging migrants to make the dangerous journey. In Guinea, Wednesday, 11 were sentenced to life in prison for the killings of 80 Ebola healthcare workers and journalists in the southern town of Womey last September at the height of the epidemic. The prosecution had sought the death penalty. 15 others were acquitted. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization Wednesday said the number of confirmed cases of the deadly virus has exceeded 26,000, with nearly 11,000 having died over the past year. In the weekend of April 19th, WHO says 33 new confirmed cases were reported, including 21 in Guinea and 12 in Sierra Leone. This is VOA News. Nuclear talks between Iran and six major powers resumed Wednesday in Vienna. U.S. spokesperson Marie Harf says the focus is on the technical details following this month's framework agreement.
We've been talking with all of the negotiating teams over the past few weeks, actually, about the work plan. So we've been doing a lot of that work over email or over the phone. So that's sort of how we got to this point where they're all on the ground talking substance. So we're really more focused on the substance, trying to work on all the annexes with the technical teams. Secretary Kerry may meet with Foreign Minister Zarif on Monday. We're still finalizing the schedule, but really pushing forward to get technical work done. When we have to bring in, higher-level political officials, we will.
The parties have a June 30 deadline to turn the framework agreement into a final deal that keeps Iran from building a nuclear bomb. A Saudi-led coalition launched new airstrikes in Yemen Wednesday, hours after announcing a halt to a month-long bombing campaign. The raids hit Houthi rebel positions in the central city Taiz and the southern port of Aden, as ground fighting between rebels and supporters of exiled President Abu Mansur Hadi continued. On Tuesday, Saudi Arabia said it would focus on achieving a political solution. The Houthis are calling for a return to UN-sponsored peace talks. Hundreds of Houthi supporters rallied in the capital Sana'a Wednesday.
I want to send this message to the Saudian kings and princes. We will not obey your orders. We are a free people. We will protect our country until the last beat of our lives. No one can control Yemen. We are free.
According to the World Health Organization, more than 1,000 people have been killed and thousands more wounded over the past month. Tens of thousands of Ethiopians Wednesday rallied in Addis Ababa, denouncing the killing of nearly 30 Ethiopian Christians in Libya at the hands of the Islamic State group.
The nation is in a massive sense of shock and disbelief at the atrocities against its citizens overseas. Now we have been hit by a shivering news of a wave of brutality perpetrated on Ethiopians in Libya by the international terrorist group called ISIS.
The Ethiopians in Libya are believed to have been captured by the IS group while seeking passage to Europe. Some were beheaded, others shot, in a video released on the Internet Sunday. Niger already coping with a meningitis outbreak among its young people, forcing some schools to close, confirmed Wednesday an outbreak of highly pathogenic H5N1 bird flu found in chickens in the southern town of Baradi near Nigeria's border. Chilean authorities are evacuating hundreds of people after the volcano Calbuco erupted Wednesday for the first time in more than 42 years. Chile, on the Pacific Rim of Fire, has the second largest chain of volcanoes in the world after Indonesia. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's Electoral Commission institutes new measures in preparation for next year's general election.
Recently, the country undertook enrollment of its citizens for purposes of issuance of the national ID. We have collected the biometric data from the data bank of that registration exercise.
Jotam Teramua is spokesperson for Uganda's Electoral Commission. There was heavy fighting early Wednesday among rival factions, South Sudan's army in Malakai. A European Union court rejects President Robert Mugabe's appeal to end targeted sanctions. And South Africa seeks long-term solutions to xenophobia.
It's not possible to turn off the migration that is happening in Africa. The entire continent is moving, and South Africa cannot stand aside and say we won't be part of migration on the continent.
Jesse Duarte is spokesperson for the African National Congress of South Africa. Kenya launches a major police recruitment drive following recent terror attacks. And the World Health Organization says more children are dying because they are not vaccinated. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's Electoral Commission says it will use a biometric system to update its voters' register ahead of next year's general election. Electoral Commission spokesperson Jotam Teramua denies reports the commission lacks the necessary funds to organize the elections. Teramua says the electoral body needs about $90 million. He tells reporter Peter Clarty the government has disbursed $67 million but has yet to release the rest of the funds.
That is not really true. What is true is that we submitted our budget for the general election for the 2015-2016 general election. And government was able to give us a substantial part of that budget. There is a balance that we require, which we are hopeful that we will get, because government has always funded this election. But how the media picked it and how it presented it to the local media here is quite different.
Are you confident that you are going to get the full budgeted money that you requested from government in order to enable the Electoral Commission to do its work, that is, to administer elections in Uganda?
I am very confident that government will give us this money and will organize these elections. Because what you may need to know, Peter, is that when we organized and launched our roadmap, we requested funding in three different financial years. So each financial year, we outlined the key activities we'll be undertaking in preparation for the general elections, and we attached the cost implications. And throughout the process and the period, government has been giving us that money, and we are hopeful government is going to give us the top-up, and we hold the election. Nobody should get worried about not holding elections.
How much money are we talking about here that the government needs to top up in order to meet the requirement of the Electoral Commission?
No, we require about 70 billion. 70 billion Uganda shillings. But government has already given us about 202 billion. So if it is able to give us 202 billion, I don't see how it can fail to give us 70 billion.
There have been issues that some parties have raised about the authenticity of the voters' register or voters' roll that will be used for the election. Will the Electoral Commission compile a new one, or the old one will still be used for the election?
We are in the process of updating our voters' register. So what we did is that recently the country undertook enrollment of its citizens for purposes of issuance of the national ID. And we started with people who were 16 years and above. And the reason was, those who were 16 years and above, by 2016, they would be 18 years. So we have collected data, the biometric data, from the data bank of that registration exercise.
Jotam Teramua is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Uganda. He spoke with reporter Peter Clarty from the capital, Kampala. Many South African officials have condemned the recent wave of xenophobic attacks on African immigrants. At least 7 people have been killed, hundreds arrested, thousands displaced, and the army sent to hotspots to try to quell the violence. Policymakers, diplomats, and immigrants alike say serious efforts are needed to prevent the attacks from happening again. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's government says it has made great efforts to try to quell the outbreaks of violence that began earlier this month against African immigrants. Leaders have called for peace, numerous organizations have held marches and prayer services, and charity drives have collected much-needed items for the thousands of people who have been affected. The police presence has been increased in restive areas, and the army has been deployed to try to contain the violence in hotspots of Durban and Johannesburg. Leaders from the ruling African National Congress Party say they know that this is just a temporary bomb for a population that is angry over persistent inequality and high unemployment. Those two problems are often cited as the drivers of the horrific attacks against immigrants from countries like Zimbabwe, Somalia, Congo, Ethiopia, Mozambique, and Malawi. ANC spokeswoman Jessie Duarte spoke to journalists Wednesday.
When your house is on fire, you don't pour oil. You don't pour oil on that fire. You seek to ensure that you calm the fires down. But I do agree that in doing so, you're looking for long-term solutions. We're not looking for a short-term answer here.
She says the party needs to do more to help newcomers integrate into South African society.
We still believe that the best option for us as a country is the one where we integrate people who genuinely are refugees and cannot go back to their countries out of fear for persecution because of religious or political beliefs, come to South Africa and can and should be integrated into communities. It's not possible to turn off the migration that is happening in Africa. The entire continent is moving, and South Africa cannot stand aside and say we won't be part of migration on the continent.
Diplomats, activists, and members of the nation's million-strong immigrant community say the government may not have learned enough from the last spate of major xenophobic violence in 2008. Congo's ambassador to South Africa, Ben Mpoko, noted that very little in the way of justice came out of the 2008 attacks.
Okay, we are taking measures now to stop it, which is good. But what did we do in 2007, 2008? I'm told nobody has been convicted since then. Maybe I was told maybe one person convicted. So for the most part, we took temporary measures. We put the fire, but do we take the measure to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Human rights activist Blessing Vava, who was originally from Zimbabwe, a nation that has sent a deluge of refugees into South Africa, says if South Africa wants to stop xenophobic attacks, the country needs to fix its own problems.
We know that there are inequalities in terms of the economic and land redistribution in this country, but the issues of fighting poverty is one of the fundamental issues that the South Africans themselves must really look into so that all South Africans, they're able to access the economic opportunities.
Mark Bafo, chairman of the African Diaspora Forum, says the solution could be summed up with one word.
Education, education, education. It's very, very important. And if you don't do it, you're sitting with a problem.
Duarte noted that attacks are decreasing and that officials hope calm may soon prevail. She and many other officials, however, agree that maintaining calm will be difficult without major changes. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The General Court of the European Union Wednesday dismissed an appeal by former Zimbabwe Attorney General Johannes Tumana against EU sanctions imposed on him and 109 other ZANU-PF officials and companies. Tumana had challenged the travel and financial restrictions imposed in 2012, arguing the measures are illegal and unjustified and should therefore be annulled. Joseph Shuma is a member of the ZANU-PF Central Committee.
This is a farce. This is a joke. This is what we expected anyway from those shocking rock of the EU. How can they say sanctions are justified? What have we done to end sanctions anyway in the first place? The sanctions came because we took what belonged to us. We took our land. And then now they put us on sanctions. Why? What have we done wrong? What rules have we broken? Which people have we sort of harassed? And the answer will come clear that nobody. Yes, as a country, as a people, we have had our shortcomings. But generally, I can tell you that we have done nothing wrong to deserve sanctions. And this ruling by the court is definitely a joke of the year.
The premise for these sanctions from the outset was that human rights were being compromised and there was no rule of law. Would you say these issues have since been addressed?
There's never been a point whereby rule of law was not observed. We've always observed the rule of law. We've always been law-abiding citizens.
That was Zanu PF Central Committee member Joseph Schumann. He was speaking with Ntungamile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Wednesday's European Union court ruling to maintain targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe, his wife, and other close associates is not surprising, since the EU has already scrapped most of the measures. Only President Robert Mugabe, his wife, Grace, and the Zimbabwe defense industries remain on the list. Political analyst Nkululeko Sibana of Huddersfield University.
I think looking at this from a legal point of view and from the court's point of view, the judgment is certainly justifiable at law. It is justifiable even politically because President Mugabe's government and ZANU-PF have not done anything to improve on the situation in the country in terms of human rights, in terms of the rule of law, and in terms of electoral transparency. Therefore, there would be no reason at all for the sanctions to be removed or to be seen as illegal.
And how much impact does it have on ZANU-PF?
ZANU-PF operates on the basis of abnormality. Nothing normal has any effect on ZANU-PF. It's only when abnormal things happen. So the declaration that the sanctions are legal will not in any way affect ZANU-PF. In effect, they may use that to strengthen their abnormal position by saying it's a European, a Western court, and we take no directions from them, we're a sovereign country, and so forth. As a matter of fact, I see this as having no fundamental effect in the way ZANU-PF does things.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibana of Huddersfield University. He spoke with Ntungamile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe Service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 23rd. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Officials in South Sudan's Upper Nile State say two soldiers were killed and several others wounded when a firefight broke out overnight Tuesday between two rival factions of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in Malakal. The officials say forces loyal to former militia leader Johnson Ohlone tried to restore calm, but only made the fight worse. Waki Simon Wudu has more from the capital Juba.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer told the reporters at the Army headquarters in Juba today that the fighting involved the bodyguards of the Upper Nile State Governor, Simon Kunpoch, and those of former militia leader, Tanti SPLA General Ohlone. Aguer says two soldiers assigned to protect the governor were killed and two of Ohlone's soldiers were wounded. Aguer says shooting erupted between the two parties over what is suspected to be a misunderstanding. Aguer says he has not yet had an official report about what led to the violence.
The SPLA command is organizing an investigation team to go to Malakal and investigate into the causes of this incident, and we will know soon the facts about who was fighting who and why.
Aguer says the fighting escalated only to be brought under control when a third army unit led by Brigadier General Arcangelo Abango intervened. Aguer says heavy weapons were used in the fighting.
All the guns had been used, the machine gun and the individual rifles. If there is any fighting, definitely there will be casualties, there will be material damage.
International Medical Aid Agency, Medicine Sans Frontiers, or MSF, says in a statement that around 900 people fled to United Nations Protection of Civilians site in Malakal as the fighting raged. The aid agency is calling on all those involved in the clashes in Malakal to end the fighting and allow humanitarian assistance to get through to people in need. Oloni is a former militia leader who originally fought President Salva Kiir's administration but took up an amnesty offer from the president in 2013. Under the offer, Oloni agreed to lay down arms against the SPLA and allow the forces under his command to be reintegrated into the National Army. It is unclear whether Oloni's forces have been fully reintegrated into the SPLA. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Kenya launched a major police recruitment drive this week as part of a large-scale effort to boost security following the recent spate of terror attacks. As VOA's Gabe Jaslow reports, allegations of corruption in the process are raising all concerns about the integrity of Kenya's security forces.
At Nyayo Stadium in Nairobi, hundreds of police recruits vie for positions in the national force. The rigorous examination includes a medical check and physical fitness tests that few can pass. One candidate told local media he was turned away because he was missing some teeth. Still, thousands are coming out across the country, and the officer in charge of this exercise, Rashid Mohammed, is pleased.
And in my view, honestly, the turnout is quite remarkable. It is good, as far as I'm concerned.
Kenya launched the recruitment drive in the wake of the April 2nd terrorist attack on Garissa University College in the northeast. Al-Shabaab militants killed nearly 150 people, most of them students, in a merciless assault that shocked and horrified the nation.
That we are one indivisible.
President Uhuru Kenyatta immediately ordered the recruitment of 10,000 police as part of a promise to dismantle terrorist networks in Kenya.
We will not allow them to continue their lives as normal. The full force of the law will be brought to bear with even greater intensity than has been the case in previous years.
But Kenya's police force has a tainted past. Last year's recruitment was halted by court order due to allegations of corruption. The court said spots on the force were acquired through extortion, bribery, and favoritism. Mr. Kenyatta had to overturn the order for this year's exercise to go ahead. Kenyan lawyer Donald Rabala has reservations about starting the process again without resolving those earlier complaints.
I was approached by several clients who wanted the recruitment for last year stopped simply because there was a lot of corruption which was involved. Things happened. Some people got letters without even going through the recruitment process.
A 2014 Transparency International survey found Kenyans believe the police force to be the most corrupt institution in the country by far. While the government has called for substantial long-term reform of the security forces, for now, battling the urgent threat of terrorism has taken the front seat. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The World Health Organization says millions of children are at risk of illness, disability, and death because they are not getting vaccinated against preventable killer diseases. In advance of World Immunization Week, the UN agency is urging nations to increase efforts to keep their children healthy by getting them immunized. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization warns progress toward the UN's goal of 90% global vaccination coverage is stalling. It says one in five children worldwide is missing out on routine life-saving immunization. Data for 2013 show nearly 22 million infants miss getting their required three doses of diphtheria and tetanus pertussis vaccines. Many of these children are living in the world's poorest countries. WHO Director of Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals, Jean-Marie Okwobele, says the plateau in vaccination rates carries terrible consequences. He says about 1.5 million children are dying prematurely from preventable diseases each year. He says one way to remedy this is by integrating immunization with other health services.
We have data that show that up to 40% of children were seen at health clinics for various reasons would go out without being checked for their vaccination status, without being vaccinated when they should have been vaccinated. So correcting this, what we call missed opportunities for vaccination, is for us a key action to improve immunization coverage rates.
WHO says reasons for low vaccination coverage include lack of access to health services, insufficient number of healthcare workers, inadequate supply of vaccines, and insecurity. The UN agency says 35 countries have an immunization coverage rate below 80%. Most of the unvaccinated children are in just six countries: India, Pakistan, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, and Afghanistan. Dr. Okwobele tells VOA that officials in these countries know they have to do better and are making efforts to improve immunization. WHO estimates immunizations prevent between 2 and 3 million deaths annually and protect many more people from illness and disability. It notes there are new life-saving vaccines against diarrhea and pneumonia and reports the development of vaccines to protect adolescents and adults against influenza, meningitis, and cervical and liver cancers. Health officials urge nations to build upon these successes and not to become lulled into a sense of false security. They also note that measles and other diseases are spreading in the United States, Canada, and Europe because some parents have stopped immunizing their children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Kenya outplayed Ethiopia 25-19, 25-17 and 25-9 in the Zone 5 Women's All-Africa Games volleyball qualifiers in Kampala, Uganda on Wednesday night. Egypt dismissed hosts Uganda in similar straight sets. Earlier on Tuesday, Kenya beat Egypt by 3-1, while Uganda outclassed Burundi in three straight sets. Today, Thursday, Uganda play Ethiopia, while Burundi challenge Egypt. Turning to athletics, Ivory Coast's Marie Jose Talou clocked 11.28 seconds and 23.77 seconds to prevail in women's 100 meters and 200 meters respectively at the Confederation of African Athletics meet in Bamako, Mali on Tuesday night. Toumani Koulibaly won men's 400 meters in 46.13 seconds, while Senegal's Fatoumata Diop prevailed in the women's 400 meters. In Mauritius, the second edition of the Africa Youth Athletics Championship gets underway in Redouit today, Thursday. Defending champions Nigeria are among 28 nations whose athletes are vying for medals at the four-day event. Meanwhile, Africa 400-meter championship silver medalist Wade van Niekerk aims high at the University Sports South Africa Athletics Championships in Stellenbosch, South Africa. The two-day event starts tomorrow, Friday.
I'll be doubling up on the 2 and 4. My goals are to something similar to last year.
That's where you did the 20.21. I know you like the 200 more than the 400 meters. Thinking about your 200 meters, is that where you plan to perhaps even improve on that time?
Well, as everyone knows, that's where the love began for athletics, was in the 200 meters, the sprint events. So that's where I started my career. So it's like your first love. You didn't really lose that chemistry that you had with it. So to me, I would like to improve my time every single time I raise the race, and I'd like to do better than what I did previously.
Only two Africans have ever run sub-20. That's Francis Obikwelu and Frank Fredericks. At some point in your career, do you see a sub-20 possible?
To be honest with you, seeing that you've brought out the statistics at this moment, I believe in South Africa there's quite a few guys that would get that right now in the shape and the talent that's come out in South Africa at this moment. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few guys that would break that 22nd barrier this year, and I'd like to be one of them.
That was South Africa's Wade van Niekerk, the Africa Championship 400-meter silver medalist, speaking in Stellenbosch, Western Cape Province, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Stellenbosch, Western Cape Province, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Amnesty International Wednesday called on European leaders to launch a humanitarian effort to end the spiraling tragedy of migrant shipwrecks in the Mediterranean. That is it for this Thursday, April 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing music in Africa. This light hearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.